Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with nutrition and fitness coach Polly Campbell. Polly and I speak about why you need to learn to say no more often to achieve your goals, what to do when your environment doesn't set you up for success, the importance of cardio, and more. I hope you enjoy the episode, and please, if you like the show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Polly. Polly Campbell, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lisa. I appreciate the invite. I'm excited.
It's my absolute pleasure. And I am looking forward to hearing what you believe is the number one thing our listeners should take away from our conversation today.
I think I'm excited to talk a little bit about maybe a little bit more perspective or reality about what the fitness industry is all about. And I mean that in a positive connotation. But we could say the harsh truths. We could say, I think just the reality of it, whether you're running a business or working with clients online or in person, I think there's definitely a skewed perception of being a coach in the fitness industry, meaning it's all glamour shots and light and, you know, all highlight reels. And that's far from reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is a great topic to talk about for both the coaches listening as well as for the clients that we're training, because they, of course, have their own preconceived notions about what the fitness industry is like. Maybe they're brand new and they've seen some, I don't know, something on TV, or they want to get into bodybuilding shape, whatever it might be, or maybe they just want to lose weight. And so we all arrive at places with our preconceived notions. So I think this is a really great place to attack it. But yeah, I'm interested to hear how you got into nutrition and fitness coaching.
Yeah, so I think I have three different college degrees, varying from, you know, my associate's was in marketing and sales, and then I transferred to University of Wisconsin-Stout and pursued business finance, and that's where I played Division I rugby. And then after my undergrad degree, I worked in the field for about 2 years in those facets to which I had studied. And turned out I didn't really enjoy it as much as I might have thought I would have. And so I started to tap into asking myself some deeper questions, you know, vision questions, where do I see myself, et cetera. And so I spent part of my time while I was working and managing retail, because that's one of the occupations I had out of undergrad, studying for the GRE and kind of exploring options in the health and fitness arena. And my decision to do that was purely, you know, I think based on my experiences that I had been having with my two degrees that I had held. And it's not that I didn't like those things. I just didn't feel fulfilled. It wasn't really challenging. I didn't enjoy it. And so I wanted to do something a little bit different or obscure from, you know, what I'd went to school for. So the reality check of, you know, now I got to go back to school again, being out for several years was a huge challenge, right? Like there's applicability and experience you gather, you know, taking tests, presentations, et cetera, in school. But then you also have a wide variety of experiences in the workforce. And so kind of shifting, you know, back to the study mode and getting ready for the GRE was a bit of a struggle at first, but, you know, that carrot on the end of the stick for me was really to kind of transition to something that I found currently to be significantly more fruitful in a variety of ways. And so, you know, I played Division I rugby through my undergraduate career, and that's where I got into amateur bodybuilding. One of my rugby buddies, Braden, he's still a really good friend of mine. Him and his brother are both professional bodybuilders. I later earned my professional bodybuilding pro card. And in grad school, essentially, that's when I really started to get into training. Originally, I was doing some health consult work at the health club. I worked at a really high-end health club, and I was doing like wellness consultations with existing and new members. And what it was basically selling personal training if there was a need for it. And I found that, you know, I was making like 10 bucks an hour. This was back in 2010. So it wasn't, you know, I had trained people on and off, or people would train with me, et cetera, throughout, you know, my undergrad career. But I found that, you know, I was selling a lot of personal training and handing basically money over to trainers that didn't have to work very hard for it, not to discredit, because obviously they had really good retention rates, but essentially I was filling their schedules and I knew how much they were making. I'm like, gosh, you know, I'm good at sales. I'm good at personable skills. And I know, you know, the human body, et cetera. So what I ended up doing is I approached the owner of the health club and, you know, kind of, I didn't give her really a proposition, but I kind of suggested, like, I'm interested in training, but if there's no room for another trainer, I'd like to maybe talk about getting commit, you know, earning commissions on the sales that I'm, you know, generating. And it was 5 to 15 grand a month in sales, which was pretty lucrative for the trainers. And so long story short, I ended up, you know, getting my certification. And throughout that process, I was backloading my schedule with clients or members at the club that I was meeting for the health consult. So when I hit the floor after I received or earned my certification, I was working 30 plus hours a week. So it was, I made a ton, like, as a graduate student, you know, making the wage, they treated their employees really well. It was awesome. And it really gave me exposure, and we'll come back to exposure and how to get started in the fitness arena if you're new. But it gave me a lot of exposure, not only to how the business, that business in particular, functioned. I was able to evaluate and observe the good, the bad, the ugly, things I liked, things I didn't like. And that really kind of set the framework for, you know, my career. And I'm very grateful for that experience, because I frankly don't think, had I, you know, if the universe hadn't aligned in that particular decade, I don't think I would have probably ended up where I am today. And so throughout my career, you know, after I graduated, I moved to Minneapolis, Rochester, Minneapolis area. My fiance at the time, she's now my wife, Nikki. I opened a small studio in Minnesota and started training out of there. And then after about a year, we decided to move to Montana. And when we moved to Montana, I decided to stop training for a while, just because there were so many different moving parts. And that's the last thing, that was the last thing on my radar. So essentially that came to a quick halt, and I'm like, I want to get back into training. And so kind of the elevator speech of what I've experienced since living out in Montana since 2013, I started training for a local health or fitness club, and that picked up really fast, faster than I anticipated. And it wasn't my full-time hustle. It was kind of a side gig for a little bit. And then one of my buddies asked me, 6 years ago, 2019-ish, 2020-ish, hey, do you want to open your own gym? And it's interesting, because I never thought I would, you know, I didn't really have an interest in opening a gym ever, but it's weird how the universe pulls you in certain directions. And I think part of that calling is due to the relationships. And, you know, if you're good at something, you know, the market will tell you, your client base will tell you, those types of things kind of line up. You're just not, you know, the fake it till you make it thing doesn't really exist. If you're good at something and you put your energy into it, it will be fruitful. So I ended up opening a private facility in the middle of COVID, or as the beginning, you know, as COVID started. And fast forward 5 years, we've tripled in space size. So I went from about 1300 square feet to 4,600 square feet. So a little bit over triple, I should say. And we have a physical therapist that is running his practice now, and he's flourishing, which is awesome. We've got a crew of five trainers, five coaches. I just hired another one, so we'll have six coaches. And yeah, it's kind of been a whirlwind to think about the timeline of events on how all of these things have happened over the course of, my professional life. And I'll start my professional life from graduate school, if I can do that, I suppose. So it's been really wonderful. And I've learned a lot of different things throughout that process. I've worked for coaching companies online, some very big names, and I've had overall really good experiences. And again, similar to what I experienced with the health club I worked for, you gather these experiences, you pick out the good, the bad, the ugly, you observe how businesses run, and you kind of figure out, it's like a Rubik's cube, what works well for you based on your value system, what you want to accomplish, the market you're serving, and those types of variables, which are really important. And so now I'm just running like a chicken with my head cut off. I'm super, and I mean that, I don't want to say I'm busy, because busy, I think, is a filler word. I'm very productive. Unfortunately, I don't think I have enough time to be as productive as I would like to be. And I think, as an entrepreneur, and I think you could probably appreciate this as well, there's really no, you don't, I don't want to say you get breaks, but you're constantly working. Even when you're not at work, you're thinking about ways to improve business strategy, leadership skills, serving your population, growth, all of those things, investing, reinvesting back into your business, which is really important. And I give a lot of credit to those organizations that I've worked for over the course of my life, because I've really appreciated kind of the experiences that they've kind of brought to me, and allowed me to kind of construct something that I believe and I know is really world class, top notch.
That is so wonderful. I'm so happy for you and your success and your wife's success with your students or with your training facility. I mean, tripling in size, that's incredible, especially during that time, starting with the pandemic. So truly, it must mean you are delivering a wonderful service. And just what you said about learning from others and seeing what opportunities come along the way, that's really the best thing we can do as entrepreneurs or anyone in life, really. I believe. And then the last part that you mentioned, kind of making that your own, seeing what fits with you, what fits with your personality, how you're really dipping into your own gifts, because what's the point of copying someone else if you have your own unique gifts to add to the world? So I love it. And for those of you listening, I really encourage you to also check out Polly's Instagram or just any social media for some great content when it comes to training. For example, I saw some tips on, searcher squat or why a hex bar deadlift sometimes might be more beneficial or might suit you better than a regular deadlift or benefits of rotational movements and so on. So I see even online how much value you're providing, really. And one other thing that I actually just reposted yesterday that you posted that really, really resonated with me and with a lot of the things that I hear, was a quote that you shared, and it said, "Lack of structure will yield a lack of results." And I mean, while the sentence sounds so like, yeah, Lisa, why is this a big deal? I really want people to listen to this because I see so many people doing like random workouts. They might just do like a little bit of here and then they dabble in F45 and then they, HYROX is the new thing. And then I'm, following this training program for a week or two. And their eating habits are the same. And then they're like, well, why don't I look like the way that I want to look? Or why am I sore here or whatever? And I'm like, well, you're not really like there's no structure to what you're doing. You're doing a little bit of a training of a bodybuilder. You're doing a little bit of a training of a strongman person. You're doing a little bit of everything. So that's the results that you're getting.
Right.
I would love to hear what inspired you to post that, and also just like how you try to combat that with your clients.
Yeah, so I think the fitness industry, I mean, for me, I don't like social media a whole lot. I think, for a number of reasons, and that's not to discredit, because I think it'd be super beneficial. I generate more leads and more business from word of mouth, from referrals, from the current clients I'm working with. And I personally believe, and I've tested this, it's much easier to accomplish in a community than it is on a online platform full of millions and millions of people. And Jonathan Goodman said something really, really profound, and it's not complex. You need 30 clients paying you $300 a month to make over 100 grand a year. Now, if you're full time and you're not making 100 grand a year as a coach, like you probably could do some things to your systems to improve. Automation is not one of them. People, and I might go down a rabbit hole here, but I'm not scared of artificial intelligence. People aren't accountable to apps. Just like 60% of the people, 60% of the memberships that are sold at Planet Fitness aren't even used. So a $10 app, a $20 app, they can serve a purpose, but kind of circling back around to, the F45s and just kind of, I'll say, waffling through different phases of fitness highlights. Fitness is very much, there's a lot of fads. There's a new and exciting thing that comes along. CrossFit was one of them. That's really, I mean, it's still a thing. It's glorified circuit training, essentially. And that's not to discredit, like, don't get me wrong, I'm not discrediting CrossFit, but that was a huge movement at one point in time. And then something else comes along as a huge movement, and, like AG1 greens and like all these supplement, like it's such a clicky and faddish environment. And I almost find it hypocritical because it creates so much confusion. But when we look at the fundamentals of getting into shape, whatever that looks like, I'm not talking specific body fat percentage. I'm talking feeling your best, looking your best, changing, I call it the peanut butter to between my ears, the mentality aspect. It boils down to the basics. And it's interesting because I've shifted in my personal fitness journey over the last 15 years, from loving to work out at 5 o'clock at night, when I didn't run a business, when I had a, relatively, I'll say, consistent 8 to 5 type of a job. I worked for a healthcare clinic as a healthcare coach prior to opening my gym for 6 years. And now I work out in the mornings. And I never thought I would say that. I have these conversations, and the conversations that I remember from 5, 6 years ago, people are like, if I don't work out in the morning, it isn't getting done. I'm like, I couldn't fathom that. And now it's like, I'm walking that walk, which is great because it's what works for me. But I definitely think the fitness industry is full of a lot of fads. Like energy drinks were a huge thing. It's whether you want to call it a supplement or, an energy drink or however you want to label that. There's a lot of different things that are really promoted. And now we're having, people in positions that have a tremendous amount of responsibility that promote things that are just dog shit. Just trash. I don't know if I could swear on this podcast, but
Absolutely.
I trust that you've looked at my page and parental advisory might be granted here. But yeah, it's really difficult to navigate because I think there's a lot more temptation with people filling their pocketbook than there is truly helping people. And how do you go about selecting the right coach and picking the right path for you? And so hopefully that kind of sheds a little bit of light on what you were asking. I know I kind of pivoted a
No,
little bit there.
I think that's a really a great point of view and a great point in general that like I'm definitely in alignment with, especially, I mean, not all these products are completely useless, but I would say that they're number one, most of the time overpriced, way overpriced. Like, let's look at electrolyte drinks. That's my favorite one to pick on, to be honest. It's like, a gram of salt for heaven's sake, and then a little bit of whatever else with that, and you're charging $1.50 for a little sachet where I'm like, are you serious? So yeah, that's my little pet peeve that I have there. So I definitely understand what you're saying. But you mentioned your journey and some things that you have tried in the past that you're doing differently now. In general, that makes me curious, what are some other things pertaining to nutrition and training that you have changed your mind on over the last decade or so?
Yeah, I think exercise frequency for me is a big one that's changed, especially since, retiring from competitive bodybuilding, the 4, 5, 6 day hustle, lifting weights. Now it's more like 2 to 4 days a week, maybe. The last several years it's been mostly 2 to 3, and then recently I've upped it to 4. But I've also transitioned more into, because of my love for the outdoors, which is in part why I moved to Montana. My wife and I love to get out and do things, so I want to, and I hunt, and so there's a lot of obviously strength component involved with outdoor recreation, but there's a lot of cardiorespiratory considerations to take into play. And so actually I had a client who had a revel. So this is, I despised running. I absolutely hated it. Like, clients, people would try to get me to do 5Ks, 10Ks, and I just would flat out say, no, I have no interest. And then there was a point in time where I bastardized cardio and running, because it was the thing to do at that particular time in my life. And that's one thing I've definitely changed my mind on significantly. And so now I'm putting in, 15 to 20 miles a week on average through mountain biking or trail running. And I blame one of my clients, Amy, for getting me into running. I actually just got done training her prior to this podcast. And she was the only one that was able to crack the code on getting me to run. And I think in part because we had a really good working relationship, but she had a really pivotal moment in her fitness industry, in her fitness journey, where, and I'll share it because I know she would be okay with it. She ended up, they were at their lake house, and she fell in the water by the dock, and she couldn't pull herself out. And there was nobody else around to help her out, and she couldn't pull herself, and it scared the hell out of her, right? And so she had worked with me prior to this happening, but it was during the summertime, and so she took a hiatus, and this was 3.5 years ago. And like the week after that happened, she called me and she's like, I need to get back on your schedule. And she lost 40, 45 pounds over the next year and a half of working with me. She works with me 2, 3 days a week. I train her whole family. They're wonderful humans. She's incredibly strong. She's in the best shape of her life. She's leading by example, not only in her own household, but with her social circle. And so she had asked me, would you be interested in running the Missoula Half Marathon? And I'm like, you know what? You called me after you had a really scary moment. And for the last year and a half, you've busted your ass. And I didn't tell, like, these are things that are going through my mind in that split second decision. I'm like, you know what the hell? You've been giving me 100% of your effort for the last year and a half. You know what? I'll go run a half marathon with you. So I remember the first week of the 12-week block that we had, and it was to like run 1 mile. And I like almost psychologically, I was dead. I'm like, this is absolutely terrible. I was 230 pounds when I started running, so I'm not a small human. And, just like anything, it gets easier with repetition, with practice. And so about halfway through training for the half marathon, my wife asked me one morning, she's like, how far are you running today? I'm like, only 6. And then I caught myself, but before I could say something, she called me out. She's like, you realize you just said only 6 miles? And I'm like, yeah, this is, something's happening here.
That's awesome.
So cardio has been a big factor, and I don't think people realize how important cardiovascular health is, but also how beneficial it can be for muscle hypertrophy and recovery and seeing progress in other avenues through strength training. And so that's one thing I've really changed my mind on. And I blame Amy for that one. I also blame my wife for that one because, she's asking, always asking, what are you running next, et cetera. So that's been a really pleasant addition to my current training. And that's been really enjoyable.
That's awesome. And yeah, I think a lot of people, they are either one camp or the other in the sense of enthusiasts or complete, like, no, almost priding themselves when, like, I'm not, like, who can do the least type of thing. But you mentioned things getting easier. Obviously, we all logically know that. But it kind of brings me to the thought of, like, or actually more like a limiting belief that many people hold of fat loss is hard. Losing fat is hard or has to be hard. It has to feel hard. Is it really hard though? Or like, how can we make that get easier as well?
Yeah, and that's such a great point. And that's, I did want to talk about that because running is hard. I should say running was hard, right? The first I'll say 4 to 6 weeks. It was super challenging psychologically to start running. But the more I practiced, the more I was able to pay attention at how much easier it became building that cardio baseline and being able to improve my threshold and increase my mileage. And so, fat loss is no different. Fat loss is hard. It's not hard from a standpoint of understanding you need to be in a caloric deficit. If we can't agree on that, no further conversation can be held. But I know you agree with that as well. So it's hard because it challenges our current belief system, our self-worth, our confidence, our ability level. We start to shine the light on areas of doubt that we have in our own environment. And it is hard. I refer to if you haven't tracked your food and you start tracking, it's like orientation at your first job or a job that you have. It's 2 weeks of reading and signing documentation, and your face is just buried in learning how to do things for that organization. And tracking is learning how to nourish your body to perform and accomplish what you're looking to accomplish. So there's a tremendous amount of responsibility that the client has for embracing the entire process, but understanding that the hard part is really changing your not only your beliefs, your perceptions, and your behaviors. And that is the behavioral change is incredibly difficult. We don't like people just don't wake up and say, "Oh, I'm overweight." Like you just don't wake up and you're not 30 pounds overweight the next day or the next week or month. It's a compounding effect that takes place when we neglect to pay attention to how we're treating ourselves over the course of years. And how we treat ourselves is a byproduct of our actions and our behaviors. It's the sum of those things cumulatively, right? And so unpacking that can be incredibly difficult. And there's a lot of, I've coached thousands of clients online and in person. And I, after being, having exposure to working with all walks of life, it's most people, I think they want fat loss. They don't know necessarily what goes into it. But I think there's a large subset of clients that need to see or work with a therapist in conjunction with somebody that is a nutrition coach that, has the credentials, et cetera, that's experienced, et cetera. Because I think a lot of people get into, wanting to improve their lifestyle, but they haven't addressed the upstream issues, whether it's, a really terrible relationship they're in, whether it's a marriage or just a relationship, a long-term relationship, that can have a really negative impact. It could be a career, it could be social circle. There's a lot of variables that I think get uncovered after several weeks of coaching or months of coaching that really shed light on why fat loss is so hard for people. It's, which in turn becomes an issue with the food, right? If we're constantly going to the bars on the weekends with our friends and those friends are not supportive and those friends are in bad relationships and it's a bad environment, a negative environment for you to be in, well, what do you think you're going to do as a human? Like, we're smart, but we're also dumb. We default to what the group does usually. If you want to be successful and you hang out with people that are really terrible with money, you're probably not going to be very successful with money. And it's no different with physical fitness. If you hang out with people that do not take care of themselves, you are probably not going to be setting yourself up for success in that realm. And some people don't like to hear that, but my job as a coach is not to tell people what they want to hear. It's telling people what they need to hear. And those are some really difficult conversations to have. But I think once people, are able to kind of construct who they want to be and look at their value system and their belief system and maybe sort of reverse engineer that, I think you can start to get at least a footprint in the sand of where to begin. And for a lot of people, it's it's not just counting macros. It's maybe the goal for somebody coming on right away is saying no 3 times a week, you know, or going to bed earlier or drinking water. It's not always about calories. You know, it is in the term in the context of thermodynamics, weight gain, weight loss, but in order to pull that lever, some people call it lever, I call it lever, whatever you want to call it. There are some other considerations and things that need to be taken into consideration, I guess, prior to those things happening, right? Is that person ready to track food? Maybe not.
I
You know.
literally love everything about that, especially the point that you made there at the end and thinking about who you actually want to be and then reverse engineering. I love the concept of visualization, not for any sort of woohoo manifestation sense, but simply because we need to, for any kind of change, we need to adapt a new personality identity, really, as you mentioned.
Yep.
That includes literally everything, our behavior, and the clearer we can get on the details of what that means, like how does a person get up at what time? What do they do first thing in the morning? Do they look at their phone or do they go and drink a glass of water and get some movement and go outside? What do they wear even? What do they take to lunch with them to work with them, or do they order out? Like literally, the clearer we can have a picture in all of these, I think the more successful someone can be. And I mean, overall, what you're saying here, or what I believe I'm hearing you say, is that our in it, of course, what we want in our actions matter a lot, but our environment influences us a lot as well. But so my question to you is, short from, cutting out every single person that provides a challenge to us in our life, what are some practical things or tips for people to do when they're like, yeah, I know my environment is not conducive to what I actually want to be, but I feel like I'm alone. I can't just move to the other side, or I don't want to move to the other side of the world and start completely new. What would be a
Right.
practical tip for those people?
Yeah, so I think it obviously it's contextual. It depends on the individual circumstance. Setting boundaries, I think, is probably one of the best ways to start reshaping your environment. And setting boundaries can be done in a variety of ways. You know, taking inventory of the relationships you do have, taking inventory of the social events that you participate in. Again, like the bar scene, the bar setting, that's, you know, luckily I, you know, personally I've exacerbated that desire in my undergrad career. So I don't really have a desire to do that, but you know, it's some examples of what I've seen and how I've seen clients be successful, like I mentioned, is setting boundaries. It doesn't mean you need to cut those people off completely, but it might be limiting your exposure or limiting the frequency to which you participate in those arenas and those social circles. You know, for somebody who, here's a really good example. So I have a client online, and 8 months ago when we started, she sent me a video of her break room for work, and she's a producer and a director for films, and she had sent me this video, and I'm like, all the junk food you could, like homemade pastries, like it was incredible the amount of hyper palatable foods that were right there. And then at the very end, it was funny because there was like a little plate with some cheese sticks and fruit and vegetables. So like 95% of the temptation was stuff that I probably wouldn't recommend eating, you know, a lot of, but pretty difficult to do when you're set up in that environment. And then there's just like a little bit of some health foods or things that I would say participate in. I would have taken a whole plate essentially. That's how small it was. And so for her, that particular environment was definitely not conducive for her to being successful. So what did we do? Well, we talked about, you know, what would work. Well, you have to go to work, right? Is that environment with the food, is that in a break room away from your office? Are you know, can you bring a cooler to work? Are you able to pack your lunches? You know, so it kind of spiraled into this, or snowballed rather, into this recognition that, all right, the food's there, but I don't see it if I don't go into the break room. Okay, well, let's start with that. Can we avoid the break room? Can you plan and prep your lunches for the day? You know, is that a possibility? And so, 8 months later, she's down about 40 pounds.
Wow.
And that's just those that's one of the things we've worked on. But to give you some traction to your question there, it's tough. I mean, because our behaviors and habits are difficult to break. But I think there's confidence and power to be had in the phrase no, and no is a complete sentence. And so I think if we can start to look at some of those areas that might not be contributing to our identity or the identity we're looking to kind of rewire ourselves, it's important to remember that are you doing this for you or are you doing this for somebody else? And it's your responsibility ultimately to make those decisions, and it's never going to be perfect. We go outside the lines, but are we making better choices most of the time and making bad choices or not so informed decisions some of the time? So what we do most supersedes what we do some of the time. And that usually is the inverse with people coming into coaching. They have a lot of bad or poor behaviors most of the time, and they have, some good behaviors that see the light of day a fraction of the time. So we got to get that scale to kind of tip the other direction. And so, yeah, saying no, setting boundaries. If you're in a really, and 100% honesty here, when you build trust with a client, they will tell you stuff. And the amount of clients that I have worked with that have been in really bad relationships, of course, it's one side of the story, but and as a coach, you kind of have to walk that line. We're not therapists, so we can't give relationship advice. And I think there's a lot of people that think they're therapists, but if you're a nutrition coach, you have to, are you seeing a therapist for some of the struggles in your relationship? Because if you have a poor relationship with somebody, your environment in that household is going to be trash. So you're literally not going to be set up for success where you spend the majority of your time with that person. So just some important key things to remember. So if you are struggling in a relationship, definitely recommend it to work with a licensed therapist that can help you through some of those cognitive challenges. But it also can be very helpful to work in conjunction with a person, a coach, with your fitness goals. But they're two very separate pathways, two different skill sets, two different professions.
For sure. I think where we as coaches can still come in handy is just being a sounding board or having an open ear or asking a question so that it provokes some thoughts, because people might just be like, oh, this is how it's always been, or relationships have to be hard, and be like, is that really the case? Like, you deserve to be happy too, you know that, right? People don't believe that, and that like not believing you're deserving of a good life or having a healthy body or whatever is a large part of the limiting beliefs roots that I see out there. But I really, really am so on board with everything that you're saying in regards to setting boundaries, saying no more often, and those are things that we can practice. I think it's so empowering when people see, hey, I said no this one time, and people looked at me weird for like 10 minutes, but then nobody cared. Nobody actually cared, like everyone was busy thinking about themselves. So no one's actually caring. They might pressure you two, three times into getting another drink or having seconds or thirds, but once you say no thanks, I'm good, this was delicious, but I have had enough, they're going to back off and think about their own stuff. So yeah, really, really good tips. And one thing, I mean, it sounds like in general you're also kind of preaching, hey, moderation. You can have your treats from time to time, or you don't need to be super, super strict with everything that you're doing. But one thing that resonated with me on your page as well was in regards to, and the listeners are not gonna like that. They don't ever like it probably when I say that, but that's in regards to alcohol. Because you posted something about alcohol, not seeing any health benefits at all in alcohol, and I share the same view. I think the less we can drink, the better. It's not even like one or two drinks is absolutely good or is absolutely fine. I mean, habitually or like in terms of adherence, that's better than three or four every single night or every single week. But yeah, share with me what your view is on that, or how you would like people to think about alcohol more.
Yeah, so I'll be the first, I played rugby, and so drinking was extracurricular on a regular basis. So it would be hypocritical for me to say that I've never, consumed alcohol in my life. But the more experience and wisdom and the more serious I became about my health goals, it just wasn't something I was interested in participating in anymore. And the more the research has come out about how it impacts sleep decisions for ladies out there that really are concerned about their hormone levels, your hormones, nutrition. Saying you're going to consume w red wine for the benefits is like saying you're going to consume strawberry ice cream for the benefits of consuming fruit, because there's fruit in strawberry ice cream, right?
Comparison
Maybe
at all.
5% or whatever. But it's a class one carcinogen, and so people can tout moderation all they want, but it's like, would you say the same thing about smoking a cigarette? It's a class one carcinogen. So it's I think it comes down to personal preference, because I've worked with clients who, would drink 20 beverages a week, and we would work on setting goals. And for that particular client, the goal might be, okay, instead of 20, I'm going to drink 15. Well, for me, that's still like batshit, like that's a lot. But to the client, that's a huge win. So I would never, discredit effort to reduce alcohol consumption, knowing in the big picture that if you want to live better, feel better, move better, longevity is another buzzword that people use. Alcohol probably isn't going to be part of that equation, or very little. And so I think it's a personal decision. If people struggle to lose weight and they consume, I'll just say 3 to 5 alcoholic beverages a week, well, how do we define? What does a beverage look like? Is it a Long Island iced tea? Well, that's like six beverages in one. So we have to contextually look at what are they drinking. There's some wonderful non-alcoholic options that have been coming out from a lot of different manufacturers. Which can be a useful tool. So I'm pretty hard about the alcohol with clients, and with the intake questionnaire, like obviously you have to get a sense of like that client environment and, there if there's potentially alcoholism and, involved, we're not set up to as health coaches to kind of navigate that. That's a completely different ball of wax. I mean, we can kind of titrate around it, but tackling that head on might take some more time and some, outsourcing. But at the end of the day, it's really a personal decision. But understanding that alcohol is a class one carcinogen, which is directly related to, correlated with an increase in cancer and mortality, right? And so, by good faith, we have to make that known. I think it's important that people know that and to make their own informed decisions. On, is this part of their identity? And that could be tied back to the social group they hang out with. We get together every Saturday night for card night, poker night with the guys, and we drink, eight beverages. We play for 4 hours or whatever. So again, it circles back around to like, all right, if you are consuming alcohol, what's the context? What environment are you in? Is this something that happens regularly, or is it a one-off occasion? I think you can probably fit it in, but again, it's so many people bastardize artificial sweeteners and food dyes and all these other things. And it's like, those are the same people that go out and drink. And it's like, it's completely backwards.
100%. Yeah, the majoring and the minor on in that front, and also as you mentioned, like the problem that I have with it when it is so habitual. So every, I don't know, evening I come home and I drink my glass to just help me relax. Okay, can we dig into why you need this to relax? Are there other ways we can get you to relax and sleep better, I would argue, or when it's so habitual that weekend getting drunk, why do you need to numb out on the weekend from your week? Was the week really that bed, and can we find other ways? And habitual also in the sense of, are you really enjoying it? Because I mean, that person that drinks the 20th beverage there, I would dare to argue that they're probably not enjoying that 20th beverage that much. It could also be a Diet Coke, and that would probably go down just the same way. So I have absolutely, or I have understanding if someone is like a real they love the whole science of wine and how wine is made, and they love a certain type of wine with a certain cut of beef, and they really enjoy every single sip, and you know it's their once a week or whatever treat, and they like thoroughly enjoy every single bit of it. For me, that's a completely different story than the person that's just getting drunk for the sake of getting drunk and you know 10 beverages and so on.
Right.
So, yeah, it's tough how well accepted that is in our society, really, and that we have to justify not drinking more than drinking. I think that's kind of the sad, just the same as with nutrition. You know, you have to justify your healthy choices more, or people question your healthy choices more than they do
Right.
healthy ones. So that's sort of the sad aspect of it.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate. And the whole the connotation of saying no, like you don't have to justify yourself. It doesn't matter who's asking. Like if you're an adult and you say no, like you shouldn't, you do not need an explanation behind that. It's kind of like when you ask your parents why when you're a kid. Why can't I do this? Because they said so, right? Like they don't need to give you an explanation. They're a parent. They probably have reasons that you don't need to know about, but no is the answer. And it's no different as an adult, you know?
Precisely. Yes. Well, Polly, I want to make sure I'm respecting your time, and I do think
Yeah.
we've given people a good chance to get a different view on the nutrition and fitness industry and just your wonderful approach to it all as well. Is there anything you would like to round off with? Of course, I'm going to share all your social media handles and so on in the show notes so people can go and check out where you are. Maybe if they live close to you, even come and train with you. But yeah, anything
Yeah.
you'd like to finish with?
Yeah, actually, so I had a client from Switzerland. She came out with her significant other last summer, and they spent several days at her home, and we trained at the gym and they were able to experience Montana. So that was really cool. So if you're in Montana City, like Helena is the capital. We're south of Helena a little bit, about 15 minutes, but that's where my gym's located. The last thing I wanted to close with is, I think it's wonderful that there's a lot of people interested, men, women, in the fit, getting into fitness as a coach, right? As a leader, as somebody that can make a difference. And there's multiple ways to do that, either online, in person, hybrid, a combination. And I've found that, I'm Old Testament, just how I was raised. It's not right, it's not wrong, it's what worked for me. But if you're truly looking to make a career out of it, understand that it's the relationships that are going to make it successful. There's a lot of generally when people start to automate, their client load gets too big to be personable, and that's where it becomes a revolving door. And it becomes more of a volume deal than an actual compassionate, caring coaching business. And what's interesting about that is I would suspect that most people in the fitness industry agree that healthcare has become more of a revolving door, a volume-based business. So I can't in good faith say that that's really a best practice if you're looking to provide quality coaching services. And I've had rosters of over 100, and it sucks. It's terrible and non-automated at 100. It's absolutely awful. So my recommendation is, if you're interested in getting into the coaching, look at some areas, some fitness clubs or fitness facilities in your immediate community, and get exposure that way through training or working a front desk or just kind of getting involved in that community to see if, number one, you even like it. But to number two, build an in-person reputation in your community. Because I can tell you with confidence, you're probably going to grow a lot faster at a much more reasonable rate, or a rate that you can control and handle yourself. And then you can start to then think about branching off into offering online services, et cetera. And a lot of those clients online might come from referrals from your clients that live next, like in the same city or town as you. A lot of my clients that I have online are referrals from people that I train in person. If you're just trying to throw a spaghetti noodle and start an online business, like it's so much more challenging. It's nauseating. And then you have business coaches charging you tens of thousands of dollars to try to scale your business from ground zero. It's much more streamlined, in my opinion, efficient and more lucrative to start in your community and branch out because you can control a lot of the variables. And then you get to decide at that point, once you get to a certain threshold, do I want to do this as a full-time career? Do I want to do it part-time? Do I want to grow online? Do I want to build a team? What does it look like? Because starting just strictly online is, I give a lot of people credit. It's not easy. And I think you're stepping over dollars to save pennies at that point. Yeah.
Really great tip. Thank you so much, Polly. I hope you have a great rest of your day. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Polly. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening.